You know, Cody, I went to Target today.
You don't say.
The Superstore.
Ooh.
You know what they didn't have in the men's section?
What's that?
Turnbuckle Boogie t-shirts.
Absolute bullshit.
I agree. And you know why? There's only one place to get a Turnbuckle Boogie t-shirt.
Where's that?
You click on the show notes of this episode, you click on our link to the Turnbuckle Boogie Brainbuster Tea Store, and there's shirts and hoodies in there. And then you get one.
That's exciting.
And they're cheap, too.
Yeah, affordable.
I made sure they weren't overpriced.
Comfortable.
Sexy.
Nice to wear.
Appealing.
Yeah, of course.
Let's boogie?
Yeah. I'm going to be easily agreeable today.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Is it because of anything? We've not seen each other in a couple of weeks. We banked two episodes, so we haven't seen each other in 2 weeks. Has anything happened in the past 2 weeks since I've seen you?
I went on a vision quest.
Oh, for God's sakes. I forgot you did mention that to me.
Yeah.
Is this something we need to talk about?
I had a wonderful time with Dangerous Devin Dixon, one half of the Mason Dixon line.
You're an influencer of young people.
And all I'm just going to say is that I don't do drugs, kids.
Oh, for God's sakes.
Kids, don't do drugs. But for grown adults, I had a good time hanging out with Dangerous Devin Dixon. We played PlayStation 1. Contender. There was a boxing game, and we played that through and through. And then the last day, we decided to take LSD, and it was a...
What are you, a fucking teenager?
You know what? I never did anything when I was young. Right. I never did anything.
All the problems came along when you were an adult. That's worse.
I wouldn't even say that there are problems if I'm not...
You had a spell where you were drinking.
Technically I was a teenage alcoholic. That was the one. I was one of those teenage alcoholics who was like, well, I don't do drugs, but alcohol's legal, but not legal at this age, but it should be.
That's a great band name, Teenage Alcoholics.
Oh, fuck yeah. I don't drink no more, but every now and again, you know, I will recreationally dabble in mind-altering substances.
Jesus.
Yeah, and it was...
I'm such a square. Like, this is all like, what are you doing? You know, whatever.
Well, it's okay. The one thing that I'll say is that if you're a responsible adult, and if you are not going to do any harm to yourself or somebody else... there are ways that you can do things that are in a safe and controlled environment to make sure that you're not going to go haywire. Right. And also, LSD and psychobilly mushrooms are being used in clinical studies for depression. And I will say this much right now. I know why. I completely understand why.
I apologize. I did check out when you said if you're a responsible adult.
Yes.
I didn't realize I was sitting here with Joe Rogan. Hey, everyone. Welcome to Turnbuckle Boogie. I am professional wrestling historian Timothy Styles, and with me is Dr. Timothy Leary. Sorry, it's professional wrestler cutthroat Cody Hancock.
Yeah, and just a little bit of psychedelics aren't bad for you, I guess. I don't know.
No, I suppose that they're not. At the pace that you do, which is once ever, or maybe once every decade or whatever it is you do.
It's very rare. Like, I mean, it's very rare. But I will say that it does make sense to me now. It was a good experience. We stared at some comic books in a trip light, and I did some push-ups, which I do not recommend.
Why not?
Because I felt the floor moving underneath my body.
Oh, you didn't ride the tiger?
No.
Chase the dragon? No. I love all these metaphors.
Yeah, I went back on my couch, and I kicked up the recliner so I would not get out of the couch.
You know, I'm an insomniac, and I have a real... problem sleeping. So when I eventually crash, it's like I'm sinking into whatever I'm into.
Do you drool?
No.
You don't pass out so hard that you drool? I do that.
I didn't realize that was a thing. No, I don't. Yeah. I don't drool, as far as I know.
But do you like sleep deep?
Well, I was this afternoon. I took a fucking massive nap.
How long was the nap?
Well, I have to say it wasn't long enough because that bee of a daughter woke me up rather all of a sudden, said, "Hey, I'm starving." I went, "Okay, you don't even know what starving is." Hey, we should probably talk about wrestling before people fucking tune out.
Maybe.
Well, on today's episode, we have decided to name it after one of the biggest wrestlers in European history who I probably know the least about. Like, out of all the episodes we've ever done, this might be the person I know least about. Now, I know some. But that person is England's very own Big Daddy.
Yep, Shirley Crabtree.
Yeah, what's a great name, by the way, Shirley Crabtree.
Which I think it would have been great if he did a heel run just with his shoot name. I think that'd be amazing.
I think he was a heel for a stretch. Well, yeah, he was a heel with Giant Haystacks.
They were feuding, yeah.
No, before they were feuding, were they teaming? They were a heel tag team. And it was Shirley Crabtree.
Oh, hell yeah.
And Giant Haystacks. At a certain point, there was some sort of flip.
They eventually feuded at some point. I know that.
No, eventually feuded. They feuded for like 20 years.
It was a long time, yeah.
I mean, it brought them... It brought... what's the name of that promotion? I forget the name. But it brought that promotion to the heights that it had never been before, that feud.
Yep.
With Big Daddy at the forefront. I mean, the guy was a national treasure.
And without even knowing much about him, the key things to know about him is that he is essentially the superhero of the UK, the way that Hulk Hogan was for America.
Yeah. The way Ricky Dozan was for Japan.
Yes.
You know, there's a number of very select few who, they completely represent their country for a period of time and become, you know, almost a national treasure. He was that. I mean, the fucking Queen and Margaret Thatcher, you know, were Big Daddy fans.
Hell yeah.
But like all good things, they come to an end. And unfortunately, they didn't know when to leave well enough alone. Mm. And they rode that shit into the dirt in the early 90s. So the thing that made them the most money, by the way, I believe his brother Max Crabtree was the fucking the booker, so it was his idea to do all this Big Daddy business. But I suppose it was also his idea to write it into the ground, because that's when World of Sport canceled wrestling.
It's a shame.
Yeah, sure, because it really crippled wrestling in Europe for a good stretch of time, leaving English people, Scottish, Irish, to eventually really catch on with the WWE, probably during one of their most ridiculous time periods. And now we're having a renaissance with people from the United Kingdom.
Yes.
And there's a lot of, you know,
progress and WXW out of Germany.
Right. I was going to say there's a lot of like shooter style, although I'm not sure any of these people could legitimately stretch some people, although I'm sure some of them could.
Yeah.
But there's also a lot of like, you know, they have their own version of GCW over there.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? And a lot of them.
Yes. And there's a lot of really good independent promotions that kind of came around into the early 2000s, and you know, wrestling did come back in a really big way, because if you look at the state of wrestling content that's being made now, especially to be consumed by fans, like Wrestle Talk and What Culture come to mind if you're a YouTube person.
Christ, that Simon guy is annoying.
I'm a fan of him. I don't mind him.
You know what it is? I've grown a real distaste for certain like YouTube personalities. Like there's a format of like, you got to talk like this and you got to do a lot of quick cuts.
Let's get into it. Yep.
Yeah. Just like, all right, I've seen this act 8,000 times by 8,000 people.
Yeah.
I'm over it.
I don't mind the content. But the main point that I was getting to is the fact that the UK loves wrestling.
Sure.
They really do.
Yeah.
Well, and
in a vacuum.
Yes.
You know, as to quote Cinderella, don't know what you got till it's gone.
Oh my goodness. But I don't know as much about Big Daddy as I would like to talk about for a couple hours.
Well,
but
I pretty much spelled out the majority of his career right then and there. This is a guy who wrestled for a bit, went away, basically retired. Then his brother took over the book at this promotion, whose name is escaping me, brought him back as Big Daddy. And he essentially had a, decade plus long feud from, I believe, like the late 70s to 1992 with Giant Haystacks.
Mm-hmm.
And the funny thing was, Europe was known for these very graceful, elegant, a lot of moves and combos and reversals and,
European escapism.
Yes. And along comes this hugely overweight, dopey guy.
Still, like, incredible athlete, though. Like, he woke up every morning and jogged and...
Well, yeah, he did all that, but he was...
big.
Dude, he was 450 pounds. It was something crazy. And Haystacks, because he was almost 7 feet tall and super heavy. I mean, these two were super heavyweights.
Yep.
And they put on some of the worst matches that I've ever had the displeasure of seeing, with all due respect. Now, but I respect what it is that they accomplish. It's funny that in this place where people like Mark Rollerball Rocco and, any number of these guys who are,
Fit Finley, William Regal.
Why can't I think of Adrian Street?
Yep.
These guys are very fluid and very athletic and very dangerous. Along comes this big fat guy and just inspires the entire nation.
Well, I think that, and it's
who has, by the way, three moves, the belly buster,
yep,
the big splash, and probably something else. Maybe the foot in the corner or something.
Yeah.
He's got two less moves than John Cena.
This contest can only be won on a knockout. Between and introducing on my left and in the blue corner, the 6'11", the 40 stone, the Giant Haystacks. And his opponent on my right and in the red corner, the 6'3", 24 stone, the famous television personality, the moms of my favorite, Big Daddy.
There are no rounds, no submissions, no falls. The bout will go on till a knockout has occurred. The count of 10 will decide this bout by mutual agreement, unlimited time, the final showdown match. Big Daddy on the left, of course, in his usual white gear, and there is Giant Haystacks from Salford, Lancashire, his opponent, 6'11" of him. The referee inside the ring, Fred Green of London, and Dave Rees from Shrewsbury, the referee outside the ring watching points. This bout will continue until a knockout. A count of 10 will decide it. No falls, no submissions, no rounds. Finally, by mutual agreement, the final showdown match. Unlimited time between these two. Haystacks having avoided Big Daddy for so long. Now, will the usual body checks of Big Daddy have any effect against this giant? Yes. Daddy's chance to show us. In Haystack's corner, he's got two normal seconds plus Anaconda and Banger Walsh. There he is, Tony Walsh on the right, Anaconda the big fella. His opponent, Big Daddy, in his corner has got Irreverent Michael Brooks only.
Oh,
sure that'll work today, as it usually does, but it worked that time all right. And Fred Green in trouble in the ring. The referee in trouble already. Dave Rees looking after him as best he can. And Daddy goes over to help. And of course, as the Big Daddy bends down, Haystacks comes straight in. And Daddy in trouble at the moment. And Dave Rees getting into the ring now as the second referee, supposed to be outside. Checks. Well, that slowed Haystacks down a bit anyway. It looks as though he was getting an advantage just now. Another forearm smash over the top of the body check. In comes Daddy again. Won't see many wrestling holes in this one as Haystacks goes clean out over the top rope. And it's a question whether he beats the count or not. He won't make it. He won't make it. So the final showdown match ends with Big Daddy the winner by a knockout in a mere
Ladies
2 minutes, 50 seconds.
A knockout of 1 to 10, the winner, Big...
Don't forget Kevin Nash's hair flip.
Yeah.
I think that wrestling... if you are able to really capture people's imaginations, it is a spectacle to see people that are actually larger than life. Like when you see somebody that is as tall and as round, even if you see them do something slightly athletic, like running, it's incredible. And then
they barely did that.
But when you're doing body slams and, you know, the splash.
When I say he had three moves, I mean he had three moves.
Oh, and I'm very well aware. And also, I think that he did not actually kill the person, but he wrestled somebody that died in the ring really shortly after he did his finish. So that kind of added more to, like, probably, like, oh, my goodness, like.
But we're talking about, you know, guys who were born in the 1940s and wrestling in the 1970s.
Right.
Red meat diets.
Oh, yeah.
Not exactly the healthiest bunch, you know. Yeah. Early deaths were probably pretty common.
Yeah.
And it just happened to be in the ring.
Yes, unfortunately. And that's, but I didn't really understand the appeal of really large people until I actually have wrestled really large people or I meet wrestlers that are very large.
What's the largest dude you've had to wrestle?
The largest dude that I have had to wrestle is most likely Big Juicy. And Big Juicy is a...
Such a gross name.
Man, I love him.
I'm sure he's a great dude. I'm just saying, calling any grown man Juicy.
Yeah. But he is very, very, very large. I don't know the number on the scale or anything like that, but he's...
North of 400 pounds?
Oh, yeah. And he can move, though.
Sure.
I mean, it's incredible.
When you're young, you can do that. Eventually, the 40s come calling, and your knees... have to pay the troll toll.
Right.
You gotta pay the troll toll. If you wanna get into that boy's hole, you gotta pay the troll toll to get in. You want the baby boy's hole, you gotta pay the troll toll. You gotta pay the troll toll to get in. Troll toll.
What you say?
Troll toll.
If you want to get into this boy's hole,
that's right.
You got to pay the troll toll to get in. But when you see people like that, and then you realize, like, oh, okay. And I have a better appreciation for big men now, especially when I am in there with ones that can actually move, you know, and I think that wrestling back then, especially in Europe, comedy was kind of like a really key part of what British wrestling was. And that was something that you don't have to be able to do a bunch of really cool stuff. All you have to do is be able to entertain the crowd. Like, and if you can entertain the crowd, then that's really all that you need to do.
Well, it's funny that you bring that up. It wasn't just synonymous with English wrestlers in the 70s. I mean, it was, or the early 80s, it was everywhere. You know, if you really think about the WWF in the early 80s, a lot of it was ridiculous. Same thing with the NWA, you know, with a lot of the undercard characters who weren't bleeding all over the place. They were begging off in this really ridiculous manner. You know, if you cornered Jim Cornette and you had his tennis racket, it was the most preposterous sight you would ever
see. He's on his knees, prayer hands.
Yes. Yeah, and man. Then when you hit him, I mean, the biggest
then
cell.
Then he flies, yeah.
Yeah, the biggest cell in the world. The jacket is flailing about this way and that. The arms and legs are akimbo. It's preposterous.
But remember, it's not realistic, though. Today's wrestling isn't realistic. This is also why I think it's funny, because a lot of the stuff from back in the day is hokey as fuck. It's hokey.
Sure.
And I think that when I listen to Jim Cornette, he's always on the, well, it doesn't make sense today. Today, it doesn't make any sense today. It didn't make any sense back then either. Like, it's entertaining, though. And if people are going to latch onto it, like, I do understand some of the criticism as far as the level of realism goes, but Buzz Sawyer, watch that dude get drop kicked out of the ring, and it's like he has wires on him, like he was like John Woo, and he completely throws, and there's no logical way that that could ever happen. And like, I think that
it's the supercell.
Yeah. Wrestling, the level of athleticism has changed.
Sure.
And I think that that is probably one of the reasons why one of the easiest criticisms to pass off on today's day and age of wrestling is that it's not realistic, due to the fact of the acrobatics involved and things like that. But if you go back and watch, I mean, I've been watching stuff from 1968 in France, which is wild, by the way. Like, I gotta show you that match. I have to show you that match. I can't even remember the guys' names, but there's some crazy, crazy stuff in there that completely bends logic, right?
Right.
But it's still exciting.
Sure.
And once again, if you structure it the right way, and if you give them something to get excited about, right, they're going to respond to it.
I generally don't give, you know, I will listen to Jim Cornette periodically just because I think he's funny. Yep. Not because I'm looking for wisdom. I've already absorbed whatever wisdom he had to offer.
Yep.
And there is wisdom in there.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm not going to take his opinions. You know, there's very obvious biases going on, you know. If every episode he's watching AEW as opposed to WWE, it's very obvious what's going on.
Of course.
It pays more to shit on stuff than to say, you know, this or that. But, you know, I'll play devil's advocate for just a moment, because I did watch a clip of WWE this week because I thought, or I think it was the week prior, because I thought, like, all right, Triple H is in charge. Vince McMahon is, you know, where he's at in Connecticut on top of someone, maybe. What do you think he's doing right now?
What do I think he's doing right now? Probably shitting his pants. Like, the more that they found another $5 million.
So that doesn't mean anything. What are they going to do? He's not going to jail.
Unless they find out that was company funds. Because if it was company funds, then there may be some type of legal fucking persecution to be had.
I'm willing to bet he didn't give a shit.
Of course. Well, he didn't give a shit then. But why do you think he kept doing it?
Well, I don't know. Who fuck knows?
Yeah.
But so I watched a clip because someone we both know re-debuted there.
Yes, sir.
Kevin Cross, formerly Killer Cross, formerly, well, now again, probably Karrion Kross.
Yes.
Showed back up on Raw, I believe it was.
Yep.
And I was like, oh, let me see this. Because, you know, he's a friend of a friend, and that's good enough for me to go, hey, all right, go ahead and go. But something occurred to me while I was watching him return. In the ring was Roman Reigns and the Bloodline, the Usos.
Yep.
And I was just thinking, like, God, these guys, to borrow a James Madden-isms, they think who they are. Like, they know they're cool, and they play up how cool they are. Everyone's fucking cool here. And then out comes Karrion Kross, and he's cool, too. He's got the whole black and white thing, the leather jacket, the yep. blonde wife. She comes in, and she places a fucking...
hourglass.
An hourglass. Thank you. I was going to say a sand clock.
A sand clock.
Yes, an hourglass.
And be sure to check out Turnbuckle Boogie's Brainbuster Tees store, where you're going to be able to get the Turnbuckle Boogie sand clock.
Yeah. It's a great merchandise idea. It'll never happen, by the way. but anyway, you know, he's cool. And then out comes, for whatever reason, or maybe I'm remembering it the other way around, Drew McIntyre.
I think McIntyre may have been out first.
That's okay.
Yeah.
So Drew McIntyre's out there. And he's cool. Like, no one can be bothered. Everyone is cool. And while I was watching it, the whole time I was thinking about the way Triple H, who is a cool character, like pre-Motorhead mustache slash beard. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, the Lemmy beard.
Yeah, before that, because that was a really weird time period where he's wearing suits.
It's
and
a bold move, man. It's a bold move.
It's a bold move if you're going to wear a suit and have that shit on.
Yeah.
But before that, you know, in the little black trunks with the sledgehammer, with his old lady next to him being a real coos.
You got to make sure to, like, do the mist with the water.
Yeah. He was a cool character, even as a heel. But I just remember every time Mick Foley would get into his face as Cactus Jack. Whether he was coming down to the ring, Triple H would go from being cool to looking worried.
Yeah.
Or when you remember the Royal Rumble 2000, I think, where they were going to have that street fight at Madison Square Garden. The match starts, the bell rings, and Cactus Jack just walks up to him nose to nose and starts talking trash. Yeah. It's not picked up on the mic, but you see Triple H's face turn from being stoic
yep.
to actual fear,
which is something that you don't see.
Correct.
And and that's like, this is not just a problem across WWE. This is a problem across the entire industry, whether it be mainstream, whether it be the independents.
Right.
And I have told the students of Future Stars of Wrestling, I've told you, I'm sure I've mentioned the Bob, Dave, and Frank analogy before. It's great to be cool, but there's not a lot of people that are just willing to commit to the role of being either a asshole or a chicken shit or a coward.
I think it's possible. The point is that it's possible to be both.
Yeah.
Triple H was not a frightening individual, but he was jacked to the gills. He'd come out
with that big ass. Yeah.
Yeah. Come out with that big light show. You know, with the spitting of the stuff, and he looked, you know, with the long hair, looked like Jesus Christ, this guy is, you know, when he was at his apex, it was like, holy fuck. But he knew when to beg off or knew when to look scared. He knew when to play it up to make his opponent look credible.
Right.
You know, he did that for Mick Foley when Mick Foley was not past his prime, but he was so injured that he knew that his days were numbered.
Well, but also look at the implication of what Cactus Jack was.
Right.
Because Mankind and Dude Love were established very differently. Mankind was established as kind of being a horror type character until it kind of turned into a comedy type character,
sure.
which only held hands with Dude Love because of the backyard wrestling tapes. And then everyone at that point had known of Cactus Jack from the tape trading circles with the Kawasaki Deathmatch in Japan against Terry Funk with the exploding C4 barbed wire boards. People had seen him in WCW get thrown off the top rope onto exposed concrete by people like Vader, and him flying directly back into guardrails head first. And so when Cactus Jack comes out, that turns into, oh, this is the one that plays with barbed wire, right? And you can sit there and try to be as tough as him, but if you just try to be as tough as him, it doesn't get the narrative of the story over of that there is an element of danger dealing with this individual if he is going by this moniker.
I guess, but it's that is actually neither here nor there, not to step on or spit in the face of your entire point, but what matters is it could have been anybody.
Right.
It could have been anybody standing across from him. If he put him over facially in the way that he did,
right,
people go, oh, you know, because that the selling is so important.
Right.
The funny thing is like, I don't know, you know, pick someone rather unimportant. If he puts that
Spike
person,
Dudley.
Yeah, if he starts looking nervous and shit because he's so believable, it's really doing a service for the other person. And the whole point is, it's not just Triple H who was someone who, when it was time to be cool, he was fucking cool. But when it was time to fucking beg off and go, oh, please, God, no, oh, you know, there is no better example than Ric Flair.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I'm sad to say that you don't see characters like that anymore. There's no, you know, people say like, ah, it's all gray, there's no black or white.
No, the last one that you saw was MJF.
Yes.
That's the last one that you saw was MJF. And that is why MJF kind of became MJF is wrestling sweetheart, whether or not people want to admit it, right? He is a love letter to what works in professional wrestling.
I agree.
Like, if you commit to your role and you, so Bob's a really nice guy. You work with Bob. Bob's cool. Bob bought you coffee and brought donuts to the office the other day. Okay. Then you have Frank. Frank's a dick. He took your parking spot and he ate the rest of your lunch, even though you were too full from the day before and you were hoping to eat it again today. Right. And then you have David, who is kind of weird, but every now and again he does something nice and you really don't know how to feel about him. Right. It's very easy to tell who the babyface is, who the heel is. And I will say this, when you have the benefit of television, right? If you have the benefit of weekly television on a national platform, it's a lot easier to play with shades of gray.
...for a tag match at the Hippodrome Circus, Great Yarmouth, during which Big Daddy threw his full weight of 24 stones on top of him. It's a maneuver which is known as the splashdown, and which Big Daddy says should now be banned. Michael Peshart reports.
24-stone Big Daddy is wrestling's biggest crowd puller. It's a form of entertainment where, despite extravagant shows of force, serious injuries have been few. There's always been a suspicion that the contests have been more about theatre than full-blooded sport. It is, however, an undeniably tough way to make a living, and at the Hippodrome in Great Yarmouth last night, Big Daddy performed one of his favourite moves, a splashdown, where he dives straight on top of his opponent. Malcolm Kirk, known as King Kong Kirk, died after the move. Medical teams at the ringside had tried to save him, but couldn't. This afternoon, Big Daddy said he would continue wrestling, but was stunned by the tragedy.
I mean, in the match, I had wrestled him. I mean, he was as strong as three men. He was 25 stone. He was known as the Pitman's Hercules. And as long as I live, I'll never forget seeing him laid down there on the canvas, instead of on his feet raging and you know, and flying about.
Right, but for all you people that are stuck on the independence with me, it doesn't work very well.
Or not as much.
Right.
And you just can't have, because the whole point was, I saw the bloodline with Roman Reigns. I saw Karrion Kross, and I saw Drew McIntyre, and none of them could be bothered. And the Usos. Yeah, none of them could be bothered. Everyone was fucking slick. Everyone was smirking and smiling. And it's like, I'm bored of this, like, with all due respect.
Right.
Like, this is just kind of boring. There's no one really to get behind here. I almost wish there was that person who was a little bit selfless, who didn't mind being the fucking coward. Not full on get on the knees and, oh, please, God, you know, praying hands and all that stuff. But you can at least show a little personality, look scared, and make the other person look good, and then you beat them.
Well, but that's kind of a mission that I'm on with trying to turn the young ones onto watching older tape.
Yeah.
And I'll say this much right now. I know that you're not a fan of the early 90s era WWF stuff, the new generation. There's some really good stuff on there.
There's really good stuff in any generation, oh, yeah, in any promotion.
Jeff Jarrett and the Roadie, right? I'm telling you right now that if anyone is brave enough, and I'm challenging somebody to just take that act, right? Just do what Jeff Jarrett and the Roadie were doing. Right. Get yourself a manager that ain't scared to fucking get hit or catch dives. And you take that.
You could
that,
probably get Robert Fuller right now for a few hundred bucks. Yep.
You take that act on the road.
Yeah.
Right. And there they have such a good playbook of using.
What was Jesse James doing besides setting up the microphone, doing the whole roadie gimmick, and then maybe hooking an ankle?
More than just that.
Was he?
Oh, brother, it was more than just hooking an ankle. He was there to catch dive spots.
Oh, okay.
He did more than one thing. There is a whole entire manager playbook.
I'm not taking the piss out of it. I know that he was, all I remember is, at most, maybe the hooking of an angle.
No, he was setting up the comeback. He was setting up the cutoff, setting up the comeback, right? Like, and he was catching dives, and he was involved in the finish.
You know what the problem is with that? You know, for you, it's great because you're seeing the mechanics of what's going on, and that's great for just someone who's a fan. I can't get past Jeff Jarrett's ridiculous costume.
Which is absolutely, once again, I'm challenging somebody to get it. I'm challenging somebody to do that top. Somebody do it.
That top
was one of the best things. And like, you can listen to the way that the crowd reacted to those matches. Right. Him and Shawn Michaels, I can't remember. In Your House 2.
Mm-hmm.
In Your House 2, Shawn Michaels versus Jeff Jarrett with the Roadie ringside is an absolute master class in how to use every single person in the ring, including the referee.
Oh, just judging by the people that you've mentioned.
It was Hebner.
I'm
one of the Hebners.
Yeah, I'm willing to bet money on that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, these are world-class workers.
Yes.
And good athletes, too. You know, it wasn't always the case where you had both.
Yes. And Jeff Jarrett, I think it's really cool now because I think that people are actually going to realize that Jarrett was good.
Jarrett,
thank you. He was good.
Jarrett speaks on behalf of Subway.
And he doesn't speak on behalf of Subway anymore.
And little boys.
Yeah, let's, oof. Ha, ha. But, yes, Jeff Jarrett. People are going to go back and appreciate his stuff. Think that it's time that people are going to go back and they're going to be able to say, hey, this guy was definitely unsung. And it's a shame that by the time that somebody tried giving him his due, it was just kind of mishandled because of Vince Russo. you know?
Yeah, that was weird time period. Well, it's interesting. They're certainly lying in the sand a little bit. You know, here I am saying people should sell more. Heels maybe should put over their opponents, not just fucking be, I'm a heel because that's the role I was booked in, but I'm just going to do whatever it is that I do. Maybe put the guy over by looking scared or, you know, overly selling something the way a heel used to, but without the ridiculous garb, because that might be where contemporary gets lost.
Right.
Because the ridiculous costumes are so synonymous with, you know, by the time Jarrett showed up in that strappy business with the 20-gallon cowboy hat.
Ain't I great?
It was already passé. Because it was not that long after that he switched to slap nuts. You know what I mean?
Right.
And got rid of all that stuff.
The 2000s edgy.
Yeah, and then ironically, he became exactly what I'm talking about. Someone who couldn't be bothered. He never begged off ever again.
Yep.
He was constantly calling everyone slap nuts, and he wasn't scared of anyone. He wore
sunglasses.
Fucking yellow sunglasses, which was a good look, by the way.
Yeah, had the guitar.
But he was never scared and never did that shit ever again. And I don't think he was... I'm sure he can make an argument for, hey, my career went upward, but... I don't think he had crowds popping probably like he did during that time where he was wearing that dumb shit.
Well, I think that some people just kind of get to be put in situations that they can't get themselves out of. I think that maybe his last run in WWE when he was working with China, I think that maybe there were some misfires that happened. And then, like, the people will remember you how you leave them, you know? And by the time that it was like new and improved Jeff Jarrett, people were like, Jarrett, and they're like, I don't know if I want to buy into this.
I didn't hate him.
Yeah, I didn't hate him either. But I
hated him for keeping Vince Russo around when they went over to TNA.
I think that you'd be surprised if you just learn how to do everything and then stick with what gets the biggest reaction. Right.
Mm-hmm.
If you learn how to be a chicken shit, and if it gets good reaction in certain areas, be a chicken shit. If I go to Tennessee tomorrow and I show up to some random promotion, I'm like, hey, you know, if you got anything for me, they're like, okay, well, can you work heel? Absolutely. I'm going to end up being on my hands and knees begging off right before the babyface blows the comeback. And that entire crowd is going to be eating that shit up. Right.
Yeah.
But if I need to be like when I did the match with Hunter Freeman in LA Fights, I had to go out there and be a psychopath.
Right.
And that's what I had to do because that was what that crowd needed to see at that time.
Right.
Until you get the opportunity to be on national television, allow me to tell you that you might want to have a few more colors in your Crayola. Nifty little tiny coloring box other than just gray.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I think there needs to be a return to more of these sort of characters. Like I'm talking about, I don't think you need to dress the part like Jarrett did in the early 90s.
No, you have to. It's a prerequisite. You won't. I will not respect it. I need to see somebody in that fucking top.
I know that you want to see somebody, but I'm serious.
Okay. Yes. Yes.
Because people are going to look at you and go, what year is it? You know what I mean? Like I say, not that many years later, there was Triple H in a leather pair of briefs and
yes.
black boots looking threatening as a motherfucker.
Yep.
And he was going, oh, shit, I'm in a ring with Cactus Jack. Fuck.
Yep. And there's the thumbtacks.
Yeah. And yep. he's selling it on his face. And that was all it took for Madison Square Garden to come out of their seats going, holy shit. Mick Foley, a guy who's clearly damaged goods,
yep.
is the scariest person in this entire arena. When yeah. God knows he's really Santa Claus.
Yeah. Santa Claus that's willing to fall off in anything.
I think he wrote a book about being Santa Claus.
Yeah, he had like a children's book.
No, I think I like a proper book.
I did not know that.
I haven't
He's one of those people that listens to Christmas music year round.
I mean, I love Christmas music, but if you listen to it year-round, you really take the fun out of it.
I think Bryan Danielson is also somebody who listens to Christmas music year-round.
That's strange.
There is a subsect of people, and they say that the reason that they enjoy it is because it attracts them to the happiest moments of their childhood.
Of course.
Yeah.
But if you spoil it... I don't know why I'm talking about this.
Don't eat candy before your dinner.
Yeah.
Don't spoil your dinner.
If you're just listening to Christmas music all the time and going to fucking Disneyland every 2 months, do you really appreciate it?
I'm
like
sure.
I appreciate it.
Those people, I'm sure that they do. You know, you got to go to Disneyland all the time. You got a disposable income.
Oh, yeah. They've got fucking life by the horns.
Oh, yeah.
That is not where I'm at.
So... what if WWE ended up buying Disney? Or Disney ended up buying WWE?
Oh, this is an interesting hypothetical.
What do you think? Like, what's the first ride? what's the first ride they install?
I don't know what the first ride is. I'll tell you what the last ride is. The Undertaker's last ride.
Oh, then maybe that's the first one. Right. Is the last ride.
They just change over the Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah, they don't have any use for Johnny Depp anymore anyway.
They move out Johnny Depp and they put in a big wax figure of The Undertaker.
Let's do it. I'm ready already.
I mean, I hope that's not something that's going to happen.
I don't know if it would be the worst thing in the world.
I don't know.
And I'm not even a Disney fan.
I am a Disney fan. I'm not a Disney hater at all.
Right.
You know, I think there's something to be said about evil corporations when they put out shit. But Disney in general... doesn't, you know, outside of their, my daughter has been watching these movies, Zombies, Zombies 2, and Zombies 3.
The first day of school, a time for new beginnings, renewed friendships, and, well...
Zombie!
Wait, what?
Zombies.
Zombie!
They're musicals and they're fucking whack. I watched Zombies 3 with her. By the way, there's also werewolves who are racist and aliens.
Wait, hold. I mean, huh?
This movie, Zombies 3.
No, where do you like how like werewolves are racist?
All right, I'll give you the whole synopsis.
Yeah, you're going to have to.
Folks, thanks for coming to our
pro wrestling podcast,
our Big Daddy episode. Okay. There's a movie called Zombies, and apparently, I'm about to give my review of this trilogy. Apparently, zombies, they've figured out some sort of way so that they're not hungry for brains all the time. So, like, they're able to fight that urge or whatever. And now there's zombie kids going to schools along with regular kids, and they eat, like, tofu brains and stuff like that. That's hysterical. Anyway, it's a musical, and it's pretty stupid. I didn't see that one. In Zombies 2, all of a sudden, werewolves show up.
And they don't like the zombies.
I don't know. I didn't see Zombies 2. All I know is I saw Zombies 3. And in Zombies 3, aliens from a planet far, far away show up. And the werewolves are not a fan.
This is our turf.
Yeah.
Turf wars.
I mean, there's legitimately a song that's like, we don't like you for reasons that you have no control over. And I was like, whoa.
This is kind of rough.
The werewolves are racist. Anyway, my daughter thought it was funny. I don't know how we got there.
It's okay. It's okay.
So that's my review of the Zombies trilogy.
We were talking about Disney and wrestling, like the possibilities of Disney.
They don't make... so the stuff made for like the network, who cares? But you know what? They'll put Hamilton, the movie on there. They'll put Encanto and Pinocchio and all these things that are considered classics. Those are pretty good. So they're known for doing good stuff. But if an evil corporation or a corporation that has serious ethical issues only puts out shit, you know, it's a little less attractive.
Yeah.
I don't want to see the WWE become even more Disney-esque, more than they've already been trying to be over the last 20 years anyway.
I don't think that Disney, I used to have the same type of, oh, if Disney's going to own this property, it's going to end up getting Disney-fied. And I don't think that Disney-fies a lot of things. You got to remember, Disney still owns companies like New Line Cinema and Miramax. Miramax, home of Pulp Fiction, New Line Cinema.
And well, but those are separate.
And I do know that they're separate. But what I'm saying is that Disney seems to, one, have their hand in everything, and eventually they're going to own water and air. But they...
I think Hershey already owns those.
There we go.
They are an evil corporation, by the way.
They...
Oh, sorry, not Hershey. Nestle.
Nestle, yeah. They... I would not mind it, because look what they did with Marvel. You know, look what they did with Star Wars, right? Now, granted...
Uh-oh.
Like, I'm not the biggest Star Wars fan, and I was a really big comic book guy when I was young. Mm-hmm. After I sold my collection, it became an ex-girlfriend, you know, and it's really, really hard. Shout out to Bradley, who is a student at Future Stars of Wrestling that works at Carl's Cactus Comics, that I highly recommend that you stop in and tell him specifically that I told you to go in there and say hi to him.
In Las Vegas,
I imagine. In Las Vegas, Nevada, yes, sir.
Catch a plane ticket, come to Las Vegas. Vegas,
yes.
Go to Carl's comic shop.
Carl's Cactus Comics.
And tell him cut... There's a lot of C's in this sentence. Tell him Cutthroat Cody sent you.
That's correct. And he brings me some comics to check out every now and again, because he's just a super cool dude. Mm. And... But what they seem to have done is, like, we're going to own this. We're going to put our money into getting people that care about this to make it good. Uh-huh. That's what it feels like. You know, like, there's a lot of jilted Star Wars fans, I know, but there's also a huge subsect of people that love everything that Disney has put out with Star Wars, that love it.
I haven't heard a whole lot of people say great things about the new trilogy. I'm one of the few people who said episode 7 and 8, I liked it. Episode 9, however, ruined the party.
And too many member berries in that movie for you, huh?
No, it's not the member berries. It's like in the first 10 seconds of the movie, someone stood up at the party and pulled their dick out. It's like, oh, man, what are you doing?
Put that back away.
Hey, I've been opening my laptop computer here to try to find an email. One of the fans sent in a bunch of old wrestling cards from England. Mm. I love looking at old wrestling cards. And, you know, two of the guys, Haystacks and
Big Daddy.
Now, you got premier technicians over there, but these guys were big stars.
Attractions.
What was it about Haystacks and Big Daddy? Okay. I mean, Big Daddy, I mean, come on, man.
Right.
Well, people loved him.
People, you can't imagine... What a superstar. And when I say a national treasure.
Yeah, I get it.
Because to the working classes, this was somebody that could be their uncle or their dad or a fella sat in the pub that they could all associate with. And he had that John Bull kind of a character, which is that old English
thing. Yeah, probably very charismatic.
Very charismatic. Yeah. And just had that something. And, you know... Like we say, it's got nothing to do with...
Right.
It's a bonus if you're good in the ring.
Yeah.
It's having that connection.
Yeah.
It's having that magic of that something that some people just have. And his brother Max, Max Crabtree, was the promoter of Del Martins. He was a brilliant promoter. Max Crabtree was a...
You've talked about that. Yeah. We talked the last time we talked.
He knew how to promote wrestling.
Right.
And he knew how to promote... And he had this idea, we're going to make you into this. And, and... Shirley, like Big Daddy, his real name was Shirley, believe it or not.
Really?
Yeah, from the part of England that he was from, when he was a kid, it was one of those names like Leslie that was
right.
Just a, you know, some. It was just in that area, but
yeah.
He was called Shirley. Right? He was already retired. You know, he was 45 when he got the call to come back again, and he put a load of weight on. And all.
Well, was he Big Daddy before?
No. He had all kinds of gimmicks.
Right.
He was in the Coldstream Guards for us. So he was a battling guardsman, and he was, believe it or not, you ever look at old pictures of him from when he was in his 20s, he looked incredible. He was in the Guinness Book of Records for having the biggest ratio difference from chest to waist. You see pictures of him. He used to be a lifeguard on Blackpool Beach.
Right.
looked incredible, the blonde Adonis they used to bill him as. And he wasn't, and, you know, I've got nothing bad to say about him. He wasn't a good wrestler in any shape.
Well, yeah, yeah.
Even when he was young and fit, he wasn't. But he was a big, strong, powerful fella.
Yeah.
Very fit. And even when he was big and heavy as Big Daddy, people, he used to go jogging every day, and he was always was always about talking about conditioning and stuff. It was weird. It's dead funny, but he was always, you know, he ate loads of food to get heavy. And it was just one of those things that took off. It took off. And
whose idea was it to just call this guy up, or Max to call Max, his brother up and say, we're going to call you Big Daddy?
It was from the that play, is it Cat on a Hot Tin Roof? Is it,
I don't know. I mean, there's a play called Cat on a Hot Tin Roof.
I believe there's a character in that that's called Big Daddy. I could be, but there's something, a character out of a play that resembled a big, heavy fella. It was like a southern gentleman, I believe, that was.
Right.
I've never read it, but it something to do with that. And he had the concept in his mind of what he thought that was, and call him Big Daddy.
Fucking movie, God damn it. You know, this isn't a wrestling podcast this week. I'm just going to give movie reviews.
Yeah, there it is. So, but let's switch back over to wrestling. And I mean, if anything, since we're talking about Big Daddy, who do you think would you say is one of your favorite big men of all time?
Oh, of all time. You know who I like? And it's somebody who's been mentioned already. And it's someone who a lot of people shit on his work and shit on him personally. I don't know what it is. I like Kevin Nash.
Big Kevin Nash fan.
Yes. Out of all the people, I'm sure you're disgusted. Like, oh, you could have picked Bam Bam Bigelow or any number of people. For some reason.
I wouldn't say disgusted.
For some reason, I mean, the guy's name was Big Daddy Cool.
No, yeah, Kevin Nash was dope. Diesel was the shit.
The Diesel was all right for a while, and then he got Vince-ified, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know, he was singing Merry Christmas and doing all this cornball shit.
Don't forget the hair flip.
Yeah. Hey, look, the Outsiders were cool. There was a reason why there was a problem with the NWO very early on. Hogan joins the group, and they become huge heels, but they're also kind of rock stars because they end up having so many people that there's a handful of them that a lot of people actually like.
Yeah.
And then the lion's share from people, there's a handful that people just kind of like, whatever. And then there's a handful that they absolutely hate, which was why, you know, Kevin Nash was like the rock star of the bunch. Hulk Hogan was the miserable shit. Mm-hmm. So when they split up and did the Wolfpack business, obviously Kevin Nash was going to go to the babyface side of things and Hogan was going to stay on the heel side of things.
Yep.
And they were the sort of beacons for those two groups. He was a cool motherfucker.
Yeah.
I mean, I liked him. But that's off the top of my head. I suppose I could sit here and think and go, oh, who are my other? I'll tell you who my least favorite, Mabel, Big Daddy V.
Oh my goodness!
With all due respect,
and had a reputation for hurting people.
Did he really?
Yes.
He's also responsible for one of the most humiliating moments.
He killed your love for the business.
He didn't kill my love for the business, but he was the deciding reason why I decided the week I was supposed to start training
that you didn't.
That I said. No, yeah. I'm not doing this because this is sad.
Yeah.
Should I tell that story just to put it in context?
I think so.
All right. Basically, folks, I was going to, I mean, I spent months researching and finding a school in Vegas, and it was Buffalo Gyms.
The Buffalo Wrestling Federation, the BWF, brother.
Yeah, that's right. And it was run by this guy named Buffalo Jim. And I even went to his place of business. It was a mechanics workshop.
Right next to Crazy Horse, the strip club in Las Vegas, Nevada.
I even went down and talked to him. And it was almost like he tried to talk me out. Like he was giving me all the bad things that I should be prepared for. Like he thought I was going to walk in there and go, hey, I'm here to make my $1 million. I didn't think that at all, but he talked to me like, oh, well, you know, you might make $20. It's like, yeah, I know all this stuff. Come on, chop, chop. Let's get to the meat of the matter. When can I start? And it got down to it. And the week I was supposed to start, I went to one of his shows and it was clear to me that this was just an excuse for Buffalo Jim to either get some ass or live out a fantasy or all of the above.
Yeah. But
the show starts and he comes out and some of the trainees are dragging his big fat carcass while he's dressed up like a Indian shaman.
Yep.
You know, like a voodoo kind of guy with a top hat and the chicken bone necklace.
Just before you go any further, a fun fact, Buffalo Jim's daughter may be listening to the episodes now. Just keep going.
Sweetheart, I'm really sorry, but this is the God's honest truth.
Yeah.
Anyway, he came out on this big stuffed buffalo and the eyes, I remember, I feel like they were glowing red. I almost think there was some smoke coming out of their nose.
Yep, there was.
But of course it was a taxidermied buffalo, you know, that was, you know, glued to a platform that was on dolly wheels and was being drugged by some poor bastard who actually paid him for the pleasure.
Yep.
And I just remember him bucking and just like going, whoa, wearing sunglasses indoors.
And then the chicken bone necklace.
Yeah, the chicken.
The top hat.
And I just remember thinking, this is silly, but you know, whatever, bring on the show. And the big get for that show was like, hey, it's Mabel. No, I'm sorry.
Big Daddy V.
It was Big Daddy V. Where did the V? He was something else.
Right? He was Viscera.
Viscera. Yeah. Yes. So it was Viscera this time.
Okay.
And if you folks remember, Viscera wore a big vinyl leather suit.
Yes.
Like something Martin Lawrence would jog in the California summers in before he passed out. Big, I mean, from head to toe, this big leather suit. And he had white contact lenses in. And eyeliner and makeup and the blonde, bleach blonde mohawk. And I mean, just imagine a giant 500-pound black guy. This guy couldn't hide anywhere.
Right.
But this was their big get. And he gets in the ring and there's not even a match. It's just like every student that this guy had ran into the ring and had a move done to them by Viscera. Like, yep. Here's a power slam. Here's a body slam. Here's a, you know, whatever sort of whip. And everybody bumps and rolls out. Everyone powders. And at the end, I just remember Viscera stands up. He's sweating profusely because he's wearing a giant garbage bag. And Buffalo Jim goes, folks, Viscera is going to stay in the ring for 5 minutes and take a Polaroid with you for, I think it was $20.
Yeah, excellent.
And I was just thinking the whole time, a Polaroid? What year is this? And $20 seemed a little hefty, but... And apparently a lot of people felt the same way I did, because Viscera stood there by himself for 4 or 5 minutes in a dead, quiet ring in the middle of a nightclub to silence. And then now and then, every, you know, I don't know, 45 seconds, Buffalo Jim would go, come on, guys, who wants a picture with Viscera?
Yeah.
And I don't know what it was. It was so, I was so humiliated on his behalf.
Yep.
That I saw I was not in love with how Buffalo Jim handled things. I was not in love with, you know, if this was the dream that I should be standing in a garbage bag in the middle of a ring when no one wanted to fucking take a picture with a camera from the 1980s with me for 20 minutes or for $20.
Yeah.
And I have to stand there and look fucking sad and sweating. I don't know.
This is where wrestling goes to die.
The dream. It wasn't only this, by the way. I should say, at the same time, the industry was starting to, it had hit its apex maybe a year prior.
Yep.
Things were on the downturn. And I don't want to claim like I'm some sort of Nostradamus, but I did see the writing on the wall a little bit. And this really sucked the dream out of me in this moment. And I think I was going to continue to look elsewhere. Like, I didn't want to go to his school. I was going to try to look elsewhere. But before I did, I ended up joining a band, and my life completely split off in a different direction.
Yep.
Because I wanted to be a number of things. I wanted to be a comedian, a musician, a pro wrestler. I just wanted to be a performer. I was in love with all those things, and I still am.
And you found ways to incorporate wrestling into what you were doing with your band, Scorchamenza. You know, talked about it before, where you had the feather boa and, you know,
right. I stole a lot of the verbiage I mean word for word from Dusty Rhodes and Ric Flair.
If you will.
Riding on the end of a lightning bolt.
Yes.
Yeah, and just put it in my own, you know, words. So, yeah, but, yeah, that was the moment that Big Daddy V, and that's not even why I think he's the most, my least favorite, although it doesn't help. That, I mean, that period where he was King Mabel was the shits. I was not a fan of the Viscera era, and Big Daddy V was, you know, anyway, rest in peace. I like that I'm burying this guy after he's dead.
Hope that you're doing well. regards. But I, you mentioned Bam Bam, right? For me, Bam Bam, and especially if you go back, Devin Dixon and I watched Lawrence Taylor versus Bam Bam Bigelow at whatever WrestleMania that was.
Right.
That match was, I remember people online saying, oh, it's a bad, it's not good. That match was actually pretty fucking dope. And it was very clear that Lawrence Taylor was blown to smithereens. And he was,
where do you think that money he made went? Oh
man, he also was like throwing bombs and Bam Bam was just eating it. Eating it.
I mean, you know why that is. Because they were probably, you know, kayfabing him still. Like, yeah, you're going to have a main event. And, you know, like.
Yeah. Well, I'm also sure that Bam Bam understood, like, there's only a limited time frame in order to show this guy what to do.
Right.
And I'm tough enough to where I can get hit in the mouth. And, man, if you go back and watch that match.
I think the business was still protected.
When you're backstage, though, you know, that match.
Not that level. I'm saying, all right, we're going to have a match. Oh, how do I throw a working punch? All right, not that he would word it that way. It's like, you just throw a punch. That's
right. What
you tell the celebrity to try to protect it.
Right.
So that when he goes off and tells the fucking.
And that's
the New York Giants front line, he goes, God damn, these guys fucking popping each other.
But they actually, the football team had spots.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, Mongo had a spot. You know, like. I
think it was like several teams. There was just like
he came out with whatever team he was on.
The New York Giants.
And it was the new. Sure.
Shame on you.
For what? Not giving a fuck about football?
Not giving a fuck about. Lawrence Taylor is one of the fucking greatest defensemen of all time.
I'm a big fan.
To not know that he was on the Giants is crazy.
I don't watch sports.
I don't watch sports either.
But you know that.
Yeah. I played
NFL Blitz.
Then you should know Lawrence Taylor was on the Giants.
I don't pay attention to the
names. I guess you're a little older than me. I played Super Tecmo Bowl.
There you go.
And if you were Lawrence Taylor, that was the only thing stopping Bo Jackson.
I was about to say Bo Jackson, I know, because Bo knows baseball.
He also
Bo knows football.
Yeah.
Yep. I know Bo Jackson, because Bo knows.
So you're saying that if you had to pick, it would be Bam Bam Bigelow?
I would say like there was a lot of guys that were really celebrated, but Bam Bam's somebody that you should go back and watch. I think that even watching his work in ECW, the matches that he had with Van Damme were absolutely incredible. The matches he had with Taz, holy, it was so good.
But what constitutes a big man?
So what?
Are we talking about super heavyweights?
For me, I'm talking about somebody that is most likely considered to be a super heavyweight. I'm talking about rotund. I'm talking about unassumingly athletic, right? I was also a fan of Yokozuna. Like, I thought Yoko was really impactful with a lot of the stuff that he did.
I thought he was really close to that Jeff Jarrett style character.
Yeah.
It's like, what is a fucking sumo wrestler from Japan doing here?
Hey, that leg drop was good. And the bonsai drop.
Speaking of leg drops, let me say this. It's a little off topic. Actually, here's a big man. Nikita Lyons. This broad. She's my favorite big man right now. But she's got some finishing maneuver where she jumps and does the splits and lands cooch first on her opponent's face.
Man, I cannot take the piss out of her because I like her stuff. I actually dig her stuff, but that was definitely what doesn't help is the fact that she psyched it up. Like, you know, she was like in the corner and I'm sure that they practiced it a bunch of times and it went fine. But for some reason, when they tried it live, it just was not as spectacular. I knew exactly what the setup was, what they were going to go and do. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of missed the mark, you know?
I don't know. I've not seen it. She's done it multiple times. I have so many funny thoughts, but they're so inappropriate. Not yeah. like, get me in, tag me in. I'd let her sit on my face. Not that. When I see a girl who's that thick, all I could think of, I bet she has really meaty farts.
Hey, Jesus fucking Christ. So she, I'm a fan of her. Like I said, super athlete. Mm-hmm. Actually pretty proficient in kickboxing and boxing and all that other stuff.
Yeah, don't take what I'm saying as gospel. I'm just making jokes over here. I'm just saying the super hot, thick broad jumping up cooch first on your face.
Some people pay extra for that.
I know.
Just saying. I think they call it, it's called cake farts.
Oh, stop it. Quit giving out these websites on our show.
Yeah. I'm not giving out websites. I'm just telling people so they don't go.
Right. Hey, kids, don't do acids.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what you don't want to do is go down to the corner of 53rd and 3rd and talk to a guy named Gene.
Yeah, and
give him $5.
Yeah, and
find a dark corner somewhere.
Maybe way more than $5. drugs are expensive, kids.
God, you're a bad influence on this show.
I will openly tell people I waited 37 years. Mm. That's how long I waited.
Good God.
And I ate some donuts while it was happening. It was pretty neat.
So this should be enough for you to never do it again. I know how much time you spend in the gym. You ate donuts.
Yeah. Oh, man, it was delicious.
Of course, because you're normally used to eating raw broccoli or whatever.
Yeah, no, what's been rotation lately? It's been bison and rice with chicken stock, and then I make a smoothie that's 2 cups of frozen spinach.
Oh, gross.
Yep. No, wait. Stop. Just wait. 2 ounces of orange juice, and then 2 ounces of actual cranberry juice, not like cranberry juice cocktail, right? And every now and again, I put these kelp cubes in it.
It's sterile, and I like the taste.
Yeah. It makes me regular. Yeah.
Yeah. Big man. Yeah, I don't know. I suppose I didn't prepare by thinking about all the big men. I've never been that enamored with big men in history. I liked Kevin Nash when he was the top baby face at WCW for a time. I remember liking Big Boss Man when Hulk Hogan was nowhere to be seen.
Yeah.
Sadly, he doesn't get the respect that he's due, in my personal opinion. I don't think he's in the Hall of Fame.
No, I don't think he's in the Hall of Fame yet. Sure. I'm pretty sure that at some point that time's going to come, but also I don't know what his status with the company was.
Right. And also, I don't know. He popped a crowd for a bit as their main babyface for a minute, which is strange when you really think about it. Like, hey, get Big Boss Man in there to, you know, take over. And when everyone came back, when Hogan was back in his spot, he trickled right back down, and then he disappeared for a while, and then he came back as SWAT team boss man.
And much better shape. Well, he was Ray Taylor.
Better shape, but doing mid and lower card matches.
He was Ray Taylor. Ray Trailer. Yeah, in WCW. My apologies.
Well, that's his real name.
Yeah, and he... I was a fan of him for sure. And I mean, honestly, I'd put Stan Hansen up there. I'd put Steve Williams up there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, if we're going to talk about like Bam Bam Gordy and shit like that, and include them in with Yokozuna and all these guys who are obese, then fuck yeah, I'm going to go with, you know, Dr. Death and Bam Bam Terry Gordy.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Abdullah the Butcher.
I'm less in love with Abdullah the Butcher. Abdullah was an interesting character because he was like the last of the circus sideshow.
Yep.
Where he was a traveling independent. He was the true independent guy. He just went from territory to territory doing his act. And I got to say this now as something of a smart fan. I don't like the idea of, you know, going like this guy would just, you didn't have a say in the matter whether he was going to break out a fork or not.
So I actually have a fun story.
Okay, go ahead.
And I can't tell you who I heard the story from, but I have it on good authority.
Sure.
When Abdul the Butcher would do tours of Japan, he would always ask for forks, obviously, when he would eat. And the places he would get forks, he would actually steal them.
And yeah, that's then, the Cactus Jack will tell you that where they would go out to eat that day, and then he would leave with the fork.
He would go back to the hotel room, and he would gig himself in the hotel room, and then he would just take the fork, and he would press it up to his forehead,
right,
and dry the blood, and then he would go and sell those at the merchandise table in Japan.
And in the end, apparently had hepatitis C, so...
Congratulations. You win!
Turnbuckle Boogie is a Devo Looter production and is produced by Timothy Styles and Cody Hancock, with web production and music provided by Timothy Styles. For more information, go to turnbuckleboogie.com. And for booking information on Cutthroat Cody Hancock, go to cutthroatcody.com. See you next Monday.